Support for the South Carolina Lead is made possible in part by AARP. The coronavirus continues to affect us all, keeping us apart, but we don't have to be alone. AARP is here in South Carolina, providing information that can help you and your family. Click to connect at aarp.org/sc.
Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on June 1st, 2020, from my home in Columbia. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. And in this episode, we change gears for a moment and take you on the ground to Saturday's protests in Columbia, spurred by the death of George Floyd, the star with thousands gathered peacefully at the statehouse, before devolving into isolated acts of destruction by a small group of people. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voice mailbox to hear from you all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a one-minute-long voicemail at 803-563-7169. That's 803-563-7169. Tell us what's going on in your world, where you are, and what's happening day-to-day for you. We'd love to hear you. Currently in South Carolina, the spread of COVID-19 remains ongoing and uncontained, according to the Department of Health and Environmental Control. There have now been 500 deaths, and currently there are 12,148 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of June 1st at 4 p.m. 450 hospital beds statewide are occupied by patients who have either tested positive or are under investigation for COVID-19. And on Saturday, the state recorded a record daily high of 420 positive COVID-19 cases. This as the state continues to test more. And that's our COVID conversation for this episode.
To the Floyd family, to the Aubrey family, you know, we get so tired, y'all. It's too many people we can't even name them. I feel guilty when I forget one of our fallen soldiers' names. Do y'all feel me? We are done. Black people are done. And let me tell you what I learned recently. This is what somebody told me. South Carolina follows no one. And everybody follows South Carolina. We are the revolution. We are the revolution.
Thousands gathered at the South Carolina Statehouse Saturday to protest the death of George Floyd, the unarmed black Minneapolis man who was killed in police custody as a white officer knelt on his neck for more than 8 minutes on May 25th. At the Statehouse, there were signs saying Black Lives Matter, Stop Police Brutality, and Please, I Can't Breathe, the words George Floyd uttered as he slowly died. His final moments, captured on video, have led to widespread condemnation, worldwide protests, and violent altercations. Many protesters in the 80-plus degree sun and heat in Columbia have masks on since the coronavirus pandemic continues unabated in the state. Kimberlyn Myers of Blythewood, who is sitting with others on the shaded statehouse stairs, describes the shirt she's wearing and a sign she's carrying. She also tells me her thoughts.
I have an I Can't Breathe outfit with, I guess, blood stains all over it. And it says, Am I Next? And it says, Stop killing us with everybody that has passed away or murdered. Actually, a danger of police brutality. I'm sick and tired of people killing us, honestly. Once I saw George Floyd die, that was way different than everything else, honestly. It made me realize I can be the next person. My father can be the next person. My twin brother can be the next person. If my boyfriend, anybody. And we're not free yet. We never will be free. We will always be roped up and chained and murdered because of the way that my skin is. And I've always been judged the way that I talk, because I don't talk the way that a black person talks. So I've always been bullied and pushed around the way that I am, especially my skin color that doesn't match. But we're all human, we're all people, we're all the same, and it's sad that we're still continuing to die because of the skin color that we're born with.
I ask Kimberlyn what white people need to do to help this situation. She quickly takes off her mask, which has the Chanel logo pattern all over it, and says,
y'all need to stop being silent, because y'all see all these other white people that are here? They came to out of work. They want to protest and stick up for us because they see that this is still happening. They see that their friends and family are still getting killed because of just a different shade of color. So for the white people and everybody else, I'm not saying, I understand that it's hard to speak out because you might be discriminated because of it, but don't worry about that. If you know that there's something wrong in the system, speak up about it. Because it's not going to stop. If you speak up about it, people are going to recognize, okay, hey, that's an ally.
Further down the steps, I speak with Traylon Collins, a first-time protester and mother who has her two young sons and daughter with her. I ask simple questions about her feelings, and her emotions are raw.
I have black sons, and as a mother, I want my sons to live. My sons have a right to live in this country just like any other citizen does. And if I have to fight to make sure that my kids have a future, I will. I'm angry. I'm angry. I'm tired. Like, and I'm not even a violent person. I just want peace. I want to live. I want my children to live. I want my grandkids to live. I want their kids to live. It's right how everything that's going on in the world, all because of hatred, because one group of people hate another group of people for absolutely no reason. And I want change. That's it.
Carolyn Pathick is a 19-year-old woman from Aiken. She is one of hundreds of white people in the crowd decrying the injustices they see foisted upon people of color. And in Pathick's case, her own brother.
Well, first of all, I go to USC Columbia, so this is my community, and I want to do what's right and speak out what I believe. And also, I have a brother who is half black, and I see what he has to go through when I'm with him and how we get treated differently when he's with us, and it's not right, and I want to stand up for that.
Before I leave, I spot Tony Gallman standing in the shade. He's a bigger black man in a hat, surgical mask, polo, and jeans. I ask him about the struggles he's seen over his 57 years living in South Carolina, a state he's lived in his entire life, except during his time in the Air Force.
It seems like, you know, we try and take steps forward, and then all of a sudden things happen to make the culture seem to take a step back. You know, that is what I have seen. You know, we just got to be vigilant, and we got to keep pushing and do things in decency and in order. As long as we do things in decency and order, I think we'll be okay.
Decency and order would only last for a bit longer that day. By mid-afternoon, some of the crowd from the Statehouse heads about a mile to the Columbia Police Department. The building and municipal court make up Justice Square, which has a green space out front on Washington and Lincoln Streets. Here, tensions are higher. By the time I arrive, there are a dozen police in riot gear standing behind a barricade, blocking the steps to the police building, where officers, including Sheriff Leon Lott, are standing. Here are some of the sounds, the demands, and the conversations protesters were having with officers.
That's all. We want accountability.
You can hear water bottles and other objects fly from the crowd, hitting some officers and other protesters. I dodged a few myself and saw several officers hit some square in the face, but these officers took it in stride. They didn't instigate anything, even when protesters were yelling at them face to face, some deriding black officers for being police officers. I saw one black female officer who was just pulled off the line drinking water after standing in the heat, a single tear running down her cheek. Richland County Sheriff Leon Lott later recounted the first part of his day and the escalating afternoon.
I walked today with the group. When it started, I walked with them by myself, and I walked. And there was no issues. For 2 hours, I stood at the state house with the crowd there and listened to them, and there was no issues. That's the people who came, and they protested peacefully, which is their right. And we were there to support them, and I was there with them. And there was no issues with that group. And then a group came here to the police department, and the organizer asked me to speak, and I got on the megaphone and spoke to the group. And the good people left. The good people saw what was about to happen, and they left. They realized that there was another group here who could care less what happened in Minneapolis. All they were here to do was for destruction and attack law enforcement and anybody in public safety. The group that's here now has nothing to do with the group that came out and stood at that state house in that sun and peacefully protested. This is a different group. This group here is not going to be allowed to take over Columbia. They're not going to take over the city police department. They're not going to destroy this police department, and they're not going to destroy this city.
But like Lott said, things escalated and changed. Police cars were set ablaze, shots were fired in the area, and according to Columbia Police Chief Skip Holbrook, officers were assaulted and injured while trying to help a man who appeared to be wearing a hat in support of President Donald Trump.
We don't know what caused the conflict, the affiliation with what, different groups, but yes, it started with some opposing viewpoints. There was a pursuing what we would consider a mob assault. Officers came to render aid to the person that was injured, and they were assaulted as they tried to rescue or provide aid to the person injured.
Sheriff Leon Lott said rubber bullets were fired to disperse the crowd from the officers. All of this and more led to the decision late in the afternoon to impose a 6 p.m. curfew, and tough words came from Columbia Mayor Stephen Benjamin.
When protests go from being peaceful to being violent, the conversation changes. We have people out there right now, not all of them, but a significant number of them, who are violating city ordinances, who are violating state law, who are violating federal law, and it just won't be tolerated. We're going to have conversations, continuing conversations with community leaders that these two men in particular have been leading for decades now, pushing for systemic reform and policing, pushing for changes, ensuring 21st century policing, ensuring transparent and accountable systems of justice to the best law enforcement officers this country has, surrounded by public policy leaders and a community that believes in them. Are we perfect? Absolutely not. Do we aspire to build them a perfect union? Absolutely so. We're going to keep doing that. But what's happening right now cannot and will not be tolerated in this city, not as long as I'm the mayor. We're going to shut it down, and shut it down right now.
And Mayor Benjamin didn't mince his words when he spoke directly to out-of-towners who he said were causing trouble.
For those not from our city, I want you to take your asses home right now.
Despite the calls for peace, this is where things in Columbia really popped off. Moments after that press conference, crowds outside of Justice Square flowed down Lincoln Street to the intersection with Lady Street as smoke continued to plume from burning cop cars. From there, the destruction escalated. I watched as a group of people smashed the glass sliding doors of the Aloft Hotel and moved to the nearby Sadler's jewelry store. Though they broke the store's glass, the group couldn't breach the store's metal security shutters despite repeated attempts. Other damage occurred to nearby businesses, including the Blue Marlin restaurant, as law enforcement had not arrived on the scene yet. It was an incredibly volatile and chaotic moment that, if left unmitigated, was ripe to spiral and spread throughout the Vista, the dining and shopping district that is one of the city's most vibrant areas. One person even told me to stop filming. Sensing an unnecessary confrontation, I, while I was wearing a yellow neon vest with the word press on the back, moved across the street and continued filming instead. An armored vehicle with several officers carrying non-lethal shotguns arrived in minutes, while officers in riot gear a block away were preparing to move down into the Vista to converge and push up Lady Street.
Y'all, the police coming down!
All of this while smoke continued to hang over the area from a third and final police car still ablaze, and thick black smoke billowed out from a nearby parking garage from two cars that were set on fire. Once the scene was secure, fire crews quickly arrived. Now, the officers were converging to move up Lady Street, and they told people to heed the new 6 p.m. curfew, it now being 7 o'clock.
Go home. Everyone go home.
Not everyone was thrilled about it, though.
Stupid piece of God help this you and your fucking mama, bitch.
With the area now clear, I survey the damage of broken windows and spray-painted brick storefronts. I spot IF Art Gallery owner Wim Roofs, whose gallery just doors down from the jewelry store, was unaffected. He recounted the tense moments and the divide facing our country.
Well, I mean, I didn't see anything else than that you saw, but just in the last sort of 20 minutes, when the police pushed the crowd back from the police station, they came all down to my block of Lincoln Street, you know, across from the Blue Mall, and I own IF Art Gallery. So they all started coming in here, And then part of the crowd started to break into Sandler's jewelry store. As you can see, they busted in all the windows, but the place was pretty secured. Then they started busting in here, and they went into this building next to me, which is right now empty, and they lit a fire there. So I went to get fire extinguisher. In the meantime, the cops were coming, so I gave them the fire extinguisher to put that out. But, you know, to bring that crowd down here, you know, that helps the police station. Didn't help us here. Watch it. And, you know, nobody is in favor of looting and burning stuff. Certainly not burning small businesses and all that. But it's been a long time coming, you know. A lot of people seem to be more upset about some of the forms that the protests take than the way George Floyd died. And that's a problem. That is probably the problem. So, what are you going to do?
With some crowds dispersed, law enforcement began its first push to begin securing the Vista by moving up the two-lane Lady Street to push out around 150 protesters who remained in the area. There were no mass arrests or police macing people point-blank or anyone being assaulted. There was just a continued push by officers with plexiglass shields and helmets moving up and out to secure the business district. That's not to say that movement was not without intermittent conflict and the occasional arrest. In the golden evening light, a line of police officers formed and chanted in unison, "Move, move, move," drowning out the sounds of protesters. Protesters who stood in front of the police line on Lady Street were repeatedly warned to leave the area and even received a public safety push alert to their cell phones about the new curfew. Standing behind the police line, dodging projectiles, I witnessed a surreal moment. A high school graduate with his mortarboard and gown is having his picture taken in front of the line of officers in riot gear. This is 2020. But as the sun began to slowly set, plastic and glass bottles and rocks continued to sporadically rain down from the remaining crowd, prompting officers to launch volleys of tear gas. This is a bit loud as they launch them, and you can hear the shells hitting the ground. Stinging plumes of gas rose as far as a half a block away. And now we're at the corner of Lady Street, which is right next to Country Western Pub, where people smashed in, stole booze, and damaged property. And this is where I witnessed several arrests. A group of six women remained standing arm in arm in the middle of the street as a line of police moved through, and officers arrested them on the ground and walked them to a nearby paddy wagon. After this, a call comes out about the next block up, around Assembly Street, a main thoroughfare in Columbia, with a tree-lined median. I get to Lady Street and Assembly, and it's a bit of a free-for-all. Roller cart trash cans are blocking some lanes, people are running through traffic, cars are honking their horns. I watch from the median as a black and white officer attempt to handcuff a black man on the other side of the street. Several other people are nearby, but these are the only cops present at the moment. The scuffle continues. Oncoming cars obstruct my view from the median since the road is still open and some people continue to run through the traffic. Eventually, a black police officer in camo tactical gear and a less-than-lethal shotgun appears to disperse a crowd of white and black protesters. No one is arrested. Officers don't use any weapons against this group of about 20 people who have now gathered on the street corner. But moments later, the police line reaches the intersection and fires more gas, dispersing the crowd up to Main Street. Once I get through the tear gas up to Main Street, I only see a few people off in the distance down at Main Street and Gervais, right across from the State House, where the peaceful protests in the midday heat took place. Now it's replaced by dusk and the sound of a man climbing up a traffic pole to kick off a police camera box from its mounting. Across the street, nearly a dozen law enforcement officers stand midway up the State House steps. Two officers are watching on the roof. A chopper circles continuously overhead, as it has all day, now with its high-intensity light on. The police line reaches Assembly and Gervais, and a few protesters are still around, but some have headed back into the vista. Sheriff Leon Lott and Police Chief Skip Holbrook consult in the middle of the major intersection, along with the police line illuminated by flashing blue light. But first, the order for more tear gas ahead of their movement, even as motorists continue driving up out of the vista, which has yet to be fully shut down. The police line, stretching across all four lanes, is now being led by an armored personnel carrier as the group descends back into the area with the intention to secure intersections in and around the district to foot and vehicle traffic for the night. A few more people are arrested, but the area becomes quiet around 9:30 p.m. But the relative calm was briefly disrupted by gunfire at officers at Gervais and Assembly Street. Several suspects were quickly arrested and no one was injured. At the end of Saturday, dozens of people were arrested and 15 officers were injured. Three police cars were burned and damage was inflicted upon several businesses. As Columbia quieted down, destruction in Charleston, which had seen peaceful protests all day, ramped up. Victoria Hansen has this report.
It was a night of unmistakable violence in Charleston, and we warn you, some of the audio is tough to hear. From gunfire outside an upscale restaurant downtown, where fortunately no one was hurt, to riders pushing an officer to the ground.
I'm beating the police.
The images played out live on local television and social media late Saturday, following the nationwide protests and outrage over the death of George Floyd.
I don't think anyone expected this in Charleston.
Ken Schneider is the owner of a downtown wine bar. He has seen the city keep its composure following the massacre of 9 black parishioners at Mother Emanuel and after the shooting death of Walter Scott. Saturday, the city saw, for the most part, peaceful protests during the day. Then night fell. Snyder says what happened next was chaos.
Over the course of the next 90 minutes, we had roaming gangs of anywhere from 8 to 12 people come in.
Snyder's son had just heard gunshots outside along King Street when he came face to face with an angry mob against the glass.
And that's when the first brick goes through that window. I dodge it, and they start breaking all the windows.
Terrified customers fled as looters trashed the bar, stole bottles of wine, and set the back of the business on fire. Schneider says repeated calls to police went unanswered.
They left us high and dry. They left us to fend and defend ourselves.
By Sunday morning, dozens of businesses recently reopened from the coronavirus were boarding up, either heavily damaged or shielding themselves from another night of potential violence.
Hands up! Don't shoot!
Pockets of protesters continued to march, keenly aware the night had marred their message, justice for George Floyd, the black Minnesota man killed while being restrained by a white police officer.
They're invoking on our constitutional rights.
It's only because of last night.
Olivia McGowan was with a group at White Point Garden along the Battery when their protest was abruptly broken up.
Apparently, the permit that was permitted for them to stand peacefully in protest has expired.
People are mad. People are upset. You know, people want change.
Sully Sullivan says the protest had been peaceful and people have a right to express their outrage. He says it's time for white Americans to wake up.
It's not enough to be quietly non-racist. Now is the time to be vocally anti-racist.
The crowds, mostly young, White, black, men and women carried signs and repeated George Floyd's name.
Say his name!
George Floyd!
Back on King Street, more young people, but in their hands.
Dustpan
and some gloves and trash bags and some water.
They're eager to help clean up. And State Representative Nancy Mace is busy covering the windows of Hall's Chop House with plywood.
People should be angry over what happened in Minnesota. And protesting's okay, but rioting and destroying businesses is not.
Outside his bar, Ken Schneider is overwhelmed. He just reopened and says he now faces more than $100,000 in damage.
This morning, I was very emotional, a little so now, thinking of the generosity of all the people.
His protective mask can't hide the tears. He's grateful for a community that knows all too well how to come together.
Thanks, Victoria, for that coverage. Other protests took place across the state in small and big cities, with some Greenville police officers even holding protest signs as they stood in line with other officers. Peaceful protests against police brutality and in memory of George Floyd and others will continue to be held at the Statehouse daily, according to organizers. And Columbia Mayor Steve Benjamin continues to meet with activists to improve the city's policing, something he's been active with throughout his tenure. Governor Henry McMaster, Senator Tim Scott, and other state officials and leaders in the African-American community spoke on Sunday at a press conference about the violence and destruction that rocked the state on Saturday.
Everyone ought to be angry at what happened in Minneapolis with George Floyd. There's absolutely no excuse for that, as we all know. And we don't want it to happen here. Also, we know that South Carolina is a great place. We have been through many things before, and we've come through all of them very well. We have strong people. It's like a family, and we're very proud of that. South Carolina's been through a lot over the years, from our beginning in 1670, ups and downs, a lot of things, and we are strong people because of it. And we welcome conversation. We welcome protests. We welcome people speaking their mind, exercising their constitutional right in this country of freedom of assembly, freedom of speech, to peaceably assemble and express their concerns. We welcome it, and we learn from it every time. We butter because of it. But also, we do not tolerate lawlessness and violence and the destruction of property and harm to our people.
Governor McMaster said the National Guard was on standby and would be deployed if needed. Senator Tim Scott, the only black Republican member of the U.S. Senate, who has openly talked about several negative experiences he's had with law enforcement over the years, said the state has made strides since the killing of Walter Scott, the black motorist who was shot multiple times by a white North Charleston police officer in 2015.
If we are going to make significant progress in this state, and we are, it will happen because we all take a step back from how we feel, and we stop, and we listen. Here's what I'm asking you to listen to. First, if you are a protester, a nonviolent protester, who is selflessly saying enough is enough, and they want our voices to be heard, we admire and respect your vigilance. It's what we need. But for those who are agitators, for those who believe that violence is a way to take advantage of this situation, that is selfishness. And we as a state cannot tolerate that. We as a people cannot tolerate that. It distracts from the very important issues of this day, from Minnesota to California, here in South Carolina.
Yeah, that was a lot, guys. I know. It was a lot for me, too. It was definitely the craziest thing, most intense story I've ever covered in my career as a journalist. Some very tense moments there. As you can see, things really spiral out of control if not contained. So I wanted you to hear it. I wanted you to experience it. And I'll have more for you about all of this, as well as video on This Week in South Carolina, as this is a topic we will continue to explore on This Week in South Carolina and the South Carolina Lead going forward. Now, this is our wind down section, and we need it a lot right now. We're not going to use any COVID voicemails today, but we do want to hear you call in and tell us what you think about the situation facing our state and country. Let us know at 803-563-7169. Leave us your name, where you're calling from, and your thoughts, and we might just put you on the pod. So, all things considered, AT, how was your weekend? Did you do anything of note, of interest? Were you at the protest at all?
Well, I had a much less eventful weekend than a lot of people, and I don't know how right I feel being funny right now. And so I know for a fact that we saw a lot of incidents televised, captured on video involving the police and press. And Gavin, I was wondering what you thought about that.
Yeah, and I would say that that it's been completely worrisome when you see it in Minneapolis and you see it in other parts of the country. In Cleveland, they told reporters that they can't go downtown to cover what was going on with the protests unless they were working from their business. I mean, that's not how it works, guys. This is not how things happen with the news. You see reporters being targeted and fired upon with, you know, non-lethal dispersal methods, and it's just shocking to see it happen like that. But I will say that at least in South Carolina, at least what I saw in Columbia specifically, I can really only speak to what I saw in Columbia, was the complete opposite. I saw respect. I saw officers looking out for media and being aware of them and letting them really get anywhere they want to be, which was really surprising. So I think they were pretty well-versed on the First Amendment, which I think more law enforcement needs to be, as well as other things that, you know, I think are coming to light as well. But I'm speaking as a First Amendment person here. I mean, that was pretty strong display to see from the Columbia and area police that were involved in this, that, hey, we were able to do our jobs alongside of them as long as we weren't in their way. And I remember at one point I was standing by the police line on Lady Street and heard a call come over the radio saying media is exempt from the 6 p.m. curfew. And I thought to myself, oh, that's convenient. You know, like, thank you. because it wasn't the case down in, I think in Charleston, they had some different scuffles. There were some different, you know, media was being treated a little bit differently down there. A hotter situation, sure, but I think, you know, we were all clearly identified. Like I said, I had my high visibility vest on, and you could see press on the back of it. I mean, at points I was worried about even putting my respirator on because it might have sent the image that I was looking a little bit more anarchist, which, you know, if you have a gas mask on, it's like you're kind of prepared for what's coming for you, whereas I was just doing it as, you know, preemptively. So it's shocking to see all those things happening across the country and in parts of the state, but I think that's just going to be part of the bigger conversation when all the dust settles from a lot of this tragedy and when a lot of the dust settles from this situation, because that's police brutality. When you're being targeted, that's, you know, unnecessarily targeted, this because of your occupation, you know, that's completely different. When you have journalists identifying themselves and holding up their credentials and clearly showing that they are working, I mean, look at, you know, CNN reporters being arrested on air, like, he's just not doing anything. It's unbelievable.
Don't mace those guys. Yeah. Don't mace those guys. As simple as that. And I mean, I'm really happy that all of our regular lead contributors all are okay. You know, I know Mayan got gassed, tear gassed a little bit, and I know you did too. So I'm glad everyone's okay.
Yeah, it was definitely challenging because, I mean, you're just out there doing your job. You're not trying to instigate or be in anyone's way. I mean, I had some hairy moments out there. I was like, okay, I'll just stay back. Difficult, challenging times to cover things like that. So I'm glad everyone did make it out. So again, thank you for tuning into the pod. This was one that we wanted to really bring you the latest news on because it was just such a rapidly evolving situation, not only in Columbia, but like as you heard in Charleston and other parts of the state. So we'll be keeping up in this. We'll be keeping you informed on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. Also, support your local newspapers. They were on the front lines as well, bringing you the latest news and information from these scenes. So they're out there hustling too. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Gavin Jackson. And I know that we've been talking about a lot of news, and I've been on Twitter way too much too. So it's important to take breaks from this. I mean, you can get worked up, you know, you can lose your temper a little bit. So just, you know, take your news with a little bit of here, a little bit of there, and then go for a walk, you know.
Don't let the Twitter eggs get you.
Yeah, don't let the Twitter get to you too much. So but thanks for all the kind words out there. Thanks for the support from you all. I was definitely doing my best to make sure I could get back here and keep you updated going forward. So we are here for you going forward, like I say, and we are in full scale hashtag lead, laugh, love mode together. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. Mm-hmm.